You knew something was gonna go down. You knew eventually something was gonna go down. And it happened. It was like a bomb that basically just went off and laid waste to the entire basketball world. That's basically what happened. We'll get into it. We'll get all the way into it. Welcome to the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Jay Hicks here. Thank you for joining us on a Monday evening. Monday, April the 28th of 2014, to be exact. We are knee deep in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And it seems as though America doesn't want to focus on basketball right now. They want to focus on some off-the-court matters. The situation with Donald Sterling, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, is something that I'm sure every one of you that is listening has already heard so much about, to the point that you're blue in the face over it, you know? Does that make sense to you, that you're blue in the face over it? You hear about it? I'll tell you about it till you're blue in the face, until I'm blue in the face. I don't know. I totally butchered that. I totally butchered that idiom. But at any rate, so yeah, the Donald Sterling situation, really, really bizarre stuff coming out of Los Angeles. But at the same time, it was to be expected, I think. And we'll get right into it right now. And let me just say a few things off the top before we get into that, actually. Hit us up on the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Obviously, you can hit us on Twitter at HHSReport. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Let us know what you think of the content, anything, any opinions that you might have. Please feel free to pass those on. We're now on iTunes as well. So search Hip Hop and Sports on iTunes. You can find us in the podcast section there. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We've been on iTunes for a few weeks now, and that's doing really well. So thank you to all those who have supported the podcast at this point. I am always indebted to you, and we just try to have fun here. We just try to have fun talking about sports and music. We're going to have author Kenneth Hicks joining us later in the program to discuss the state of hip-hop as far as it relates to the ladies. I'm sorry, I listen to a lot of Bill Burr, so I just totally bit his whole routine there, but I it's hilarious. We're gonna talk about the state of female hip-hop. Nicki Minaj is making some moves of late. Iggy Azalea is making some moves of late. That kind of got me thinking about, where are we with the state of female rap? And so we're gonna get into that with author Kenneth Hicks Jr. a little bit later on in the show. But first, again, we're gonna get into the playoffs. Before we get into the basketball, we have to address the 800-pound elephant in the room. See what I did there? Merge those two idioms. Donald Sterling with the LA Clippers. In case you've been living in a cave for the last 2 days, Sterling has owned the Clippers for about 30 years. And reports have come out that he, in fact, made some racist comments, allegedly, because they haven't really confirmed it yet. So technically, it's not a done deal that this is actually him saying this stuff. But I think it's pretty safe to say that this is him. We haven't heard anybody. You know, this guy's been known for a long time. He's like a billion years old. Everybody knows this guy in Los Angeles, and nobody of note has come to his defense and said, wait a minute, that is not him. They've even talked to his wife about this thing. His estranged wife has been approached about this whole issue, and even she, to this point, has not denied that it's him talking. So, and Clippers head coach Doc Rivers has basically said, yeah, that's him talking. So I think we can pretty much safely assume that that is his voice. But he was on a phone call with one of his girlfriends, a young lady who I believe is of Black and Latina descent. She is with Sterling, most likely for his money. I think we can put two and two together there. I mean, I don't think that she's, you know, attracted to him physically or anything like that. I wouldn't guess. But regardless of the reasoning, and there seems to be some friction between the two of them, because I guess like they're involved in a lawsuit. Just one of them is suing the other. I'm not even really sure about that whole situation. But she basically set up old Donald Sterling for the okie doke, got him recorded on this phone conversation saying a lot of disparaging things about Black people. Basically saying he doesn't want her seen in public with them. He doesn't understand why she feels the need to broadcast her relationships with black people, why she would go and take an Instagram picture with Magic Johnson, that kind of thing. Really weird stuff from Donald Sterling. Just from as far as it compares to the general population, I don't think that the general population feels that way towards black people anymore. But to hear Donald Sterling say those things, it really angered a lot of people, and it really upset a lot of people. I was sitting in bed, actually. I had the computer open. I was sitting in my bed on Saturday night, late Saturday night, when the story broke. And I saw it, and I said, oh, boy. Let me go ahead and click on this and listen to this. So I listened to the whole 9-minute audio, not the extended version, because they released a remix or they released a new phone conversation with bonus tracks or something like that. I don't know. I haven't heard that one yet. But just speaking off the original one that was posted to TMZ, that's the one I heard. And Sterling basically went on to say that he, you know, all those things about black folks and Magic Johnson. She didn't like the fact that she posted a picture with Magic Johnson on her Instagram, and that he didn't want her bringing black people to his games, and he did not want Magic Johnson to come to his games. I don't even want to talk about this for a really long time, because by now you guys have heard it dissected a million different ways. I really get annoyed when these stories like this, when these sports stories become bigger than life, simply because they just consume the news media for like a week or weeks at a time, and it just gets so frustrating when they just say the same stuff over and over again. So I will try my best not to belabor the point, but. And it's funny, it was because ESPN actually didn't even pick up the story that night, because I listened to it that Saturday night, and then I went to sleep. And I wrote one Twitter comment on it, basically saying that Donald Sterling has been this way for 30 years, or for multiple decades. I think I said many decades is the exact words that I used in the tweet. Anybody who follows basketball or knows basketball knows that Donald Sterling has been this type of person for many, many years. He's had all sorts of issues with black people, his employees, his tenants from his property that he owns, and stuff like that, lawsuits and all this other stuff. Donald Sterling is not a friend to the black community. Regardless of some of his charitable donations or whatever, which somehow got him an NAACP award, which he was supposed to have received coming up really shortly here in Los Angeles, but that award was since revoked by the NAACP after this incident came out. I said that one tweet, and I pretty much left it alone after that. I was actually hoping that it wouldn't blow up as big as it did. And then I woke up the next day, and it was all over the place. And it has been ever since. And now it's on nightly news. We got, we got Al Sharpton involved. We got Brian Williams on NBC Nightly News talking about it. We got Jon Stewart doing his little spiel on it, I'm sure. And, well, I already saw part of it. And, everybody is in on the story. Everybody has an opinion. So there's a few things that I wanted to highlight real quick. A few people's opinions that I thought were right on. And just a few thoughts that I had. But basically, I think that this is a good thing for the NBA. And I know that sounds crazy, because Adam Silver, you could tell by the look on his face when he had that little press conference the other day. He was scared to death talking about this issue in front of the media. This is obviously, as has been said 100 times already in 1,000 different outlets, this is the biggest test of his young tenure as commissioner of the NBA. But The first thing that I wanted to reference was Charles Barkley. Shocker, right? I'm a Charles Barkley guy. Anybody that knows me knows that. But Barkley was dead on when he spoke of how the rest of the owners need to stand up and say something. Because initially, I think it was Michael Jordan was the only owner that came out and said something, which, as many others have pointed out, you've been stepped in when Michael Jordan's taking a stand, because Michael Jordan historically, infamously, takes a stand on nothing of significance. But Michael Jordan released a statement basically talking about how reprehensible Sterling's comments were. Barkley basically said, look, we have a league that's 75-80% black. We have 29 out of 30 owners that are white. some of these owners need to step up and say something. These white owners need to step up and say, they need to have the backs of these players, because these are their players. You know, this is their investment, obviously, these teams, but the players are what make the league. And this isn't like the NFL where it's all about the team and the shield, so to speak. It doesn't work like that. The NBA is all about stars, and it's all about players. It's about Jordan. It's about LeBron. It's about Kobe. It's about the Jumpman logo. That's what it's about. So Barkley was dead on when he said that these owners need to come out and stick up for these players, specifically the Clippers players. I do want to give a shout out to LeBron James, who I feel like is really grown into being the biggest single ambassador in basketball today that's an active player. LeBron has not shied away from his responsibility as having that position. Now, if you look back at the Trayvon Martin incident and the George Zimmerman verdict that came after that, and we saw LeBron kind of spearhead the Miami Heat's usage of the hoodies and that sort of thing, and showing some solidarity. They don't do that unless LeBron signs off on it. I don't know if it was his idea necessarily, but they don't do it if he doesn't sign off on it. And what we saw the Clippers do yesterday against Golden State was they took their jerseys off. You all probably saw it. They took their warm-ups off. They said Clippers. They threw them on the ground. They wore these inside-out warm-ups with no logo on the chest, and that was their way of kind of showing a silent protest before they went out and got smoked by the Warriors yesterday. Well, the Miami Heat tonight did the same thing. The Miami Heat also wore their jerseys inside out, did the same sort of thing as a sign of support for the Clippers team. And we saw LeBron make comments and say, look, there's no place for this man in our league, period. And I think that's really admirable, considering, as we stated previously, Michael Jordan is not that type of guy, when he was at the height of his playing days, was not that type of guy. He would never take any type of stand. He never would say anything controversial. I believe on his ESPN Sports Century, the quote was that he had raised vanilla to an art form. That was what MJ's goal was back then. So I think what LeBron is doing is really cool. Anybody that is of the belief that Sterling needs to give up the team, in a perfect world, that would be great. But I don't think that that's a solution that's plausible right now. There's a lot of litigation at hand. They haven't even confirmed that this is even him speaking on these tapes yet, officially, you know, from a legal standpoint anyway. And even so, I've heard that that's not even admissible in a court of law in the state of California anyway, if he was recorded without his knowledge. So that's a whole nother issue. But again, Sterling has been this way since forever. As long as I've been following NBA basketball, Donald Sterling has been a bigot, a racist, any of that kind of stuff. He's always done these questionable things. He's always treated his employees, his black tenants, a certain way. He's deep in this bigotry game, y'all. This is 30 years deep, probably significantly longer than that. It's 30 years that we know of as a culture, as a basketball community, have fans even known of this man. And there just hasn't been a lot of good that's come from him. I mean, we're talking sexual harassment cases, everything. And what we're seeing now is that the Clippers are actually losing sponsors left and right. And the NBA has said that there's going to be some type of news conference tomorrow, I guess, where Adam Silver is going to announce the conclusion or the findings from their investigation. And they're going to conclude with whatever type of penalty or sanctions they're going to put on Donald Sterling going forward, who did not attend Game 4, or will not, and also will not attend Game 5 tomorrow night at the Staples Center. It's this really tough situation on the players. I think Doc Rivers has handled this with a lot of class. Chris Paul has done his absolute best in the situation as well, off the floor anyway. They went out and recruited. Chris Paul's also the head of the Players Association, to make things even more awkward. He went out and recruited Kevin Johnson for help, the mayor of Sacramento, California, and former NBA player, All-Star. And which is funny, because KJ and Doc Rivers got into a fight back in the day when they played for the Suns and Knicks, respectively. They got into a little altercation on the court one time, and then Greg Anthony came off the bench in street clothes and sucker punched Kevin Johnson. It's all on YouTube. But I'm just saying, I think that's kind of ironic how this has worked out, because now they're working together on this issue, and it's really been a black eye for the NBA. And I couldn't believe that this guy would attack Magic Johnson. Like, Magic considered this man a friend. Let him tell it. And Magic Johnson's awesome. Who doesn't like Magic Johnson? That was one of my other big takeaways, was who does not like Magic Johnson? I love Magic Johnson. I've never even met the man. But everything that he's done post-retirement, even when he came out and told the public that he was HIV positive, I really feel like God put that on him because they knew that he could handle it. He could handle the burden and responsibility of being the face of that disease. And look how he's handled it the last 23 years. He's still living, for one, which is remarkable in and of itself. But on top of that, the way that he stood up and faced the mistakes that he had made in the past, and the way he's been an advocate for that community, he's put up a lot of dollars behind it. He's become a mogul off the court. He's put a lot of black people in good situations as far as giving them employment. He's opened up movie theaters. He does restaurants, Starbucks, everything else you can think of. And he's just an all-around classy individual. I don't see why anybody would have anything negative to say about Magic Johnson. He's one of my personal role models. I feel like Charles Barkley was right back in the early 90s when he said, "I am not a role model," and that just because I'm a professional athlete doesn't mean that parents should slack off and look to athletes to be role models for their children. And Charles Barkley was not a role model. But some athletes choose to embrace that responsibility, and that's what Magic Johnson has done. And so here we are now, several years later. I'm a grown man, and I still look up to Magic, even from back in the day. I remember back when he contracted the virus, and he had the little Nick News, Kids News special, when they had all the kids gathered around Magic, and he was talking about HIV and stuff like that, and the little girl broke down crying and all. I was the same age as those kids in the room when that special came out, you know? And now, to be an adult and to see who Magic is now, I just cannot fathom how anybody would have that level of a problem with him. But it's clearly not a Magic issue. It's a black people issue when it comes to Donald Sterling. But none of this should come as a surprise to anyone, because this is who he's been for 30 years in the basketball world. And so I think ultimately we're going to look back on this and say that this was a great moment for the NBA. And that sounds insane, but I'm going to explain why. Donald Sterling had to go. He had to leave at some point. A lot of people attribute the fact that the Clippers have stunk for 30 years to Donald Sterling, and they'd be correct, mainly because Donald never wanted to spend any money on the team, and thus they never got any better. But beyond that, there's just a curse. That he's an evil man. There's a curse that surrounds this man and consumed this organization and this team and that franchise. And so getting him out of there will go a long way in terms of making the Clippers right again. But beyond that, he was just a black eye on the sport. He was a cancer for basketball and for the NBA. And so when you look at it from the big picture, they had to get rid of him. And they needed an incident like this to expunge him from the league completely. And it's unfortunate that it took this type of incident. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when you up security measures after, you know, a tragic incident happens and then security measures get increased, or you go to the doctor for some reason and you find out something's wrong, but then you start taking better care of yourself. It takes that for you to take better care of yourself. Sometimes it takes an incident like this to take us to the next level, and we can be even better than we were before. And I think the NBA, in the end, is going to be better than it was before without Donald Sterling, because I expect a suspension from Adam Silver. I expect the suspension to last at least a year. That's what some people are calling for. I don't think they can force him to sell the team, but I do think that we're going to see some type of harsh, severe action from Adam Silver, the new commissioner of the league, who's going to be looking to make his mark. And David Stern, for all the good things that he did for basketball, never addressed Donald Sterling and his ways. He just brushed it under the rug, which I never really understood. But you know, this is who the guy's been for a long time. And that's why the players, you know, anybody that's saying that the players should have boycotted the game yesterday, or the fans should boycott, or the whatever, I'm not really buying that. Because if I'm a player, I'm playing for my teammates, and I'm playing for myself, and I'm playing for my fans and the city. I'm not playing for the owner. But specifically, I'm playing for the teammates in the locker room, and I'm not going to quit on my teammates just because this guy's a jerk. I'm not going to do that. And considering how hard we've worked this year, I don't really think that makes a ton of sense. I know I heard Jalen Rose said on television yesterday that he wouldn't have played. I heard Chauncey Billups on the radio today, who was a Clipper last year, said that he wouldn't play. But, you know, again, Chauncey Billups, you were on the team last year. Donald Sterling owned the team last year. You should have known that this was the rap on this guy beforehand. And yet you still played for the Clippers for like a year or two. So why didn't you have a problem with him before? He's the same guy Friday night as he was Saturday when this story came out. He was the same dude. And it was public knowledge. So I don't quite see why boycotting or sitting out playing altogether would be... I mean, again, I wouldn't do it. And again, I'm not saying that that anybody that did it would be wrong for doing it. I'm definitely not saying that. But I personally, if I were in that situation, I would have played. And I would have played for my teammates and not for the owner. But again, big picture, get this guy out of the NBA. Remove him. Excommunicate him, however you want to say it. But just remove him from this community because he's bad for it. In a league that's largely black, has a huge black fan base, and something like basketball, with it being as ingrained in black culture as it is, this is the last thing we need, is an owner like this. And so it's taken this incident to get him hopefully away from the game. But this is really best case scenario, because the player that's, or the person that's in question in the interview or in the phone conversation was Magic Johnson. Is there a better person to handle this type of thing than Magic Johnson? I don't think there is. Is there a better coach that you want to have for your team for this type of situation than Doc Rivers? I don't think there is. Is there a better leader on the floor for a team that you would want to deal with a situation like this in the league right now? Maybe outside of LeBron, you got Chris Paul. Outside of Chris Paul, I don't think there is anybody else. Maybe LeBron. You know what I'm saying? It's a great scenario the way it kind of played out. It's unfortunate that it played out during the playoffs, but nonetheless, this is kind of how it's gone. So that's my big takeaway from this, is that hopefully we can get Sterling out of the NBA, and we're going to look back on this with thoughts of, you know, well, thank God that guy's gone, and thank God we were able to move on from that disastrous era where he owned the Clippers, because it was a bad look for everybody involved. Especially, but now we're taking away from the NBA playoffs, which is, hello, been awesome. Right now I'm looking at the Spurs and the Mavericks as I'm recording this. The Spurs are up by 8 at the end of the third quarter, looking to tie the series in Dallas, but Dallas has outplayed them for the majority of the series. Even in Game 1, which they lost, Dallas still outplayed San Antonio for the majority of that series. I had, if you recall or have gone to the hiphopsportsreport.com website, you would see that I, in my playoff prediction column, had the Spurs winning the NBA championship going into the playoffs. And so I will look really dumb if Dallas knocks them off. So I'm going to need y'all to get it together down there in San Antonio. You know what I'm saying? You know who's not getting it together? The Chicago Bulls. They're definitely not getting it together. They just forgot how to play all together. Washington's a good team, so I don't want to take anything away from the Wizards. But I feel like the Bulls were the type of team that relied on guile and guts and experience and defense and rebounding. And those things were going to carry them through against a not totally inexperienced, but somewhat inexperienced team, given that their leaders, their leading scorers, and their leading playmakers were both young guys, John Wall and Bradley Beal. So for the Wizards to be up 3-1 looking for the closeout up in Chicago, that's been a fantastic series for them, even though they overcame the Nay getting suspended and still won Game 4 going away pretty much. Well, maybe not going away, but they won it pretty handily nonetheless. Miami has already swept Charlotte, so the Bobcats are done for. And the Bobcats will never win a playoff game because they're going to become the Hornets again next year. And the Bobcats are, like, I think, 0-8 in Bobcat history. So thank you, Bob Johnson, for nothing. Man, these series are so good. It's been such an excellent first round. Everybody said it 1,000 times. It's been the best first round ever. It's been the best first round I can remember. And so I was glad I jumped back in on the NBA season at the last minute, because halfway through the year I said it was trash, which it was. But on the last podcast 2 weeks ago, I said, you know what? I think I'm back in on these playoffs, and man, has it been incredible. The Hawks are up 3-2 on the Pacers. I just kind of eviscerated Roy Hibbert on Twitter, even though he's not the primary reason necessarily that the Pacers are down, because nobody's playing well for Indiana. So it's really kind of unfair for me. I'll even admit this. It's really unfair for me to lay it on Hibbert. I don't want to lay it on Hibbert specifically. It's probably more on Paul George than anybody, simply because this is happening on his watch. And when you're the star player in basketball, when you're recognized as being the best player on the floor and your team doesn't win, then something went wrong, and chances are you were not playing up to your capability. And Paul George has some ups and downs in the series, but it appears as though he's had a lot more downs than ups, and the whole Indiana team in general has just been out of sorts. Even if Paul George has played decent, you haven't seen the leadership there. Yeah, he's the best player. He's got to be able to lead these guys through this tough situation, and they can't get by an 8 seed that was like 3 or 4 games under 500 at the end of the season or whatever it was. So they're not going to win this series, man. The Pacers are going home. Pacers are going home. I'd be stunned if they won this series at this point. They're down 3-2 to Atlanta, going back to Atlanta for game 6, and the Hawks look like they're going to move on, man. It's just really unfortunate how the Pacers just completely collapsed on themselves. I've never seen anything quite like that. Let me round out the East real quick. The Nets and the Raptors, another pretty good series. They're tied at 2 games apiece. I really thought that Brooklyn was going to take a stranglehold on the series in game 4 yesterday, but they just decided not to show up for the fourth quarter, I guess, and Kyle Lowry kind of took over there. I actually missed a lot of that game because I was out. That was one of the few games in this postseason that I've missed, but I missed a large portion of that game. But I've seen enough of the series to get the feeling that Toronto's not going away easily. And I lumped Toronto and Washington in the same boat, being that they're both young, talented teams going up against tougher, more experienced teams, and my picks were the tougher, more experienced teams. And I think those are probably the logical picks in most scenarios. But I think that the Raptors are probably getting a little bit of confidence watching the Wizards take care of business against the Bulls. I mean, if I were on the Raptors and I saw the other young upstart in the conference just smacking around a playoff staple in the Eastern Conference like the Bulls, I would feel pretty confident about my chances going up against Paul Pierce and KG and Joe Johnson and those guys too. So that's going to be a tough series. It's going at least 6. Probably is going to go 7. But even in a game 7 scenario in Toronto, I would still ride with Brooklyn in that scenario, because Paul Pearson, he's just been there too many times, man. KG's been there too many times. That team, they just have so much experience, and experience does count for something in the playoffs. And so, but anyway, the Oklahoma City-Memphis series. Memphis looks like they're better than Oklahoma City, and I don't think I would have said that. In fact, I didn't say that on the podcast 2 weeks ago. I said that Oklahoma City was going to win. I said that Memphis was very good and I respected them, but I did not think they would have enough to win this series. But when you watch each game is a grind, especially since game 1. Each game in this series has been an absolute grind, and the grind favors the grit and grind Grizzlies, y'all. I mean, I know that sounds lame to say, but that's what it is. There's not a lot of breakout or fast break opportunities for Oklahoma City. They're not getting out in transition. Serge Ibaka is basically a non-factor, even though he's like the number 3 scorer on the team. Everything's falling on Durant and Westbrook's shoulders, and they haven't played well. And Kevin Durant's gotten progressively worse as the series has gone on. His shooting percentage has gone down, or his field goal percentage, I should say, has gone down every single game in this series. And Russell Westbrook, who again is erroneously taking the heat for every Oklahoma City loss or misstep, he hasn't played all that well either, though. So it's really difficult for Oklahoma City to get easy offense. And Westbrook and Durant thrive off easy offense. Durant's 7 feet tall. Westbrook is the quickest, fastest thing on the court. Those guys get easy buckets all the time. But Memphis is finding a way to take away their easy buckets. They're not getting out in transition. Tony Allen's not giving Kevin Durant an inch to shoot. Not even to breathe, let alone shoot. He's not even giving him an inch to breathe. Tony Allen is in his jersey. And Westbrook is forced to try to ad-lib, but they're not allowing him to get to the basket a lot. And he's forced to take a lot of long jumpers, which is what you want to do with him. and they're getting Oklahoma City out of their rhythm. There's no offensive rhythm. It's just you take a shot, then I take a shot, then you take a shot, then I take a shot between Durant and Westbrook. And I thought that was going to come back to get him in the second round against the Clippers. That same sort of thing. But they might not get out of this first round. I'll stick with the pick for now. I mean, I'll stick with Oklahoma City. But again, Memphis through four games, despite the fact that the series is tied at two, Memphis has looked like the better team to me. The Portland-Houston series, that I said in the column that that was probably the most intriguing series of the first round. That one is not disappointed. Despite the fact that the Blazers are up 3-1, three of those four games have gone to overtime, which is I don't think has ever happened before. And so Portland is up 3-1. They barely won down the stretch last night. The only game in Houston one was game three in Portland, where Troy Daniels hit the big shot. The D-leaguer came out of nowhere to hit the big shot of the game, which was awesome. But you know, James Harden has not played well in this series. Everybody wants him on superstar status, you know, and say he's a star, all-star, whatever. And he is. You know, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, at least on the offensive end of the floor. But he has underperformed. And Kevin McHale has done some curious things on the sideline. He continues to pound it into Dwight Howard even late in games, which that's not really Dwight Howard's forte, is to come up with big baskets late down a stretch of games. That's more of a James Harden kind of thing. And yet, we see him, at least in game four anyway, we saw him going into Dwight in overtime. And Dwight had some success, but not a ton of success. And I don't even know how comfortable you could feel with that strategy, given the fact that Dwight can't shoot free throws all that well. So it's just some really curious stuff. And meanwhile, Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge have been beyond sensational. LaMarcus Aldridge, man, his first two games in this series were as impressive as a two-game stretch as I've ever seen, that I can remember anyway, in the playoffs. And not because... Obviously, if you just look at the numbers, the sheer numbers themselves were gaudy, obviously, but it was bigger than just the 46 points and the 43 points. It was the way he was getting those points, the amount of mid-range jumpers he was hitting. No matter what Houston did, he was finding a way. He was crashing the offensive boards. He was going to the up and under, going to the jump hook, the running hook, the drop step. He had every big man move in the book on display in game one, and then he took Houston outside and started cooking them from the outside in game two. And he kind of tailed off in game three, but had a solid bounce back game four. And so there you go. He's been the best player in the series. And Portland is up 3-1. So, and I'll tell you this about the Blazers, man. If they're able to get an escape from Houston with the victory, or in the series in general, they're going to have to play the winner of the San Antonio-Dallas matchup, which right now it's a toss-up, because Dallas is hanging right with San Antonio, as we said. And if Dallas were to bump off San Antonio, which San Antonio has been knocked off in the first round before, despite being a heavy, heavy favorite, so it wouldn't be totally unprecedented if it happened. And if Dallas were to knock off San Antonio, if I'm Portland, I'm feeling pretty good about a second-round matchup against the Mavericks. I really am. Not to take anything away from Dallas, but I would feel more comfortable if I'm a Blazers fan going into that series against Dallas than against San Antonio. And it kind of opens the lane up a little bit in the Western Conference, man. There is no team in the West that cannot win the Western Conference right now, including the Rockets. None of those teams are in a position where it's like it's completely inconceivable that they could win the West. And that's hard to say and even imagine, but they're all in it. And the Golden State Clippers series, which was the one that I and most people had circled before the playoffs started, I feel like the Clippers are still the better team. And I just have to, can I roast Mark Jackson for a second? Jesus Christ, Mark Jackson. Every chance he gets to leave his players in the game of foul trouble, he leaves them in there. And then they pick up another foul. I don't understand what the hell he's thinking. He did the same thing. He did it in game one, game two, and game four. He had Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson picked up, I think, three fouls in the first quarter, in the first half, rather. And he left them on the floor, and they were up 18 points. And then he picked up his fourth foul in the first half. I was like, what are you thinking? You're ahead by 18 points. Now, they won the game anyway, so it worked out in this scenario. But why would you risk one of your best players getting in foul trouble when you have a comfortable lead in the first half. I don't like you obviously you don't want to give the lead back, but you didn't need him on the floor in that moment. You had a comfortable lead. Now if you're losing by 18 points and you need to make up some ground quick, yeah, leave Klay Thompson and his three point shooting ass in the game. I understand that, but I didn't really get what he's done. And he did the same thing. He got Iguodala fouled out in game one. He got, I think, Klay Thompson fouled out in game two, and Klay Thompson fouled out in game four. So, Mark Jackson, quit being a moron before you coach yourself right out of this series. And the Clippers, obviously, you know, their situation, their whole world is turned upside down right now. There's no telling how they were going to respond going into – there was no telling how they were going to respond going into game four. And there's, frankly, no telling how they're going to respond going into game five at home. I think they're going to win, though. I think they're going to win big. I think that crowd is going to be unbelievable on Tuesday night in Staples. And I think they're going to win pretty handily. But it's no guarantee. By any means is it a guarantee. Because this is an unprecedented situation that the Clippers are dealing with in the midst of a playoff run. Nothing quite like this involving ownership and having it trickle down. And you got sponsors yanking, you know, stuff. You got the coach making speeches and stuff that has nothing to do with the game itself on the off days in between the games. It's just a mess. It is an absolute mess. And it's really unfortunate because the Clippers are one of the better teams in this league and do have a legitimate shot at winning the NBA championship this year. So, again, it's really unfortunate. They're going to have to play better, though. Chris Paul specifically is going to have to step up. He's been very mercurial in this series. Blake Griffin's been great when they've managed to consistently get him the rock, but they haven't always done that. And you're going to have to find a way to not let Steph Curry hit five threes in the first quarter on you. That's how that's going to roll. So, man, these playoffs have been unbelievable. I don't really know what else to say about them. I've actually talked longer than I planned to about the playoffs and about Donald Sterling. But it's the NBA, man. Anybody that tells you that they think they know what's about to happen the rest of this first round and in the rest of these NBA playoffs, they're not your friend. They're lying to you. They're not your friend.
Now they wanna hear country nigga rap. Five albums in, I swear a country nigga snap. Thought they wanted trap, thought they wanted bass, thought they wanted Miley, thought they wanted drink. Fuck them niggas. Now they wanna hear a country nigga rap. Five albums in, I swear a country nigga snap. Thought they wanted gold, thought they wanted shine, thought they wanted radio. Bitch, make up your mind. Attention, I don't even know what I might do with it. That control beat is like an ugly bitch that everybody done fuck wrong. Maybe you hit it. Oh, man, I'm more concerned why niggas been texting my cell, calling my phone, ask me about this Kendall shit. They ain't even really diss me on. I ain't drawn all this propaganda. Rap shit about the realest sound. Now I'm lyrical all of a sudden. Well, last year they claim they ain't understand me. I'm bearing this. And pissing on they graves. Another nigga, other nigga name on your chain, and they call me a slave. Niggas scared of this country ball. Lord forbid I catch a bite in the studio, trying to calm your soul, looking at your manager. I think Krill's a guy, man, I'll put you in the trunk with these soul wounds. Feel wheel in my shot. I'm so prolific with these scriptures, they might give me a Bible. Page one, coming, son, mind your manners. Just be cool. I know you lame when you was in school. The little fame you ain't used to, and it was easy for you to move through. In a glass with your feet swords. Like one of these days, I'ma be a rapper, but all my verse gon' be bored. So I'ma take from all these southern artists that mainstream never heard of. Recycle all of they lingo and make sure I screw my words up. Bravo for your swagger jack, and I'm overwhelmed by your dedication. You act the fool, and people in the thinking that your music was innovative. Frustrated. Rap battle never got me out of no public housing. You telling me I can be king of hip hop and they wouldn't give it to Andre 3000? Nigga, please, this war ain't got shit to do with us. God can physically calm down and say he's the greatest. My favorite, y'all should listen. It had potential that I live the heat wave. I'ma send through this motherfucking reveal for a whole nother older culture. And that wouldn't be enough. So fuck these haters, fuck these hoes. Damn right, I still mean that. Now they wanna hear a country nigga rap. Five albums in, I swear a country nigga snap. Thought they wanted trap. Bass. Thought they wanted Miley. Thought they wanted drink. Fuck them niggas. Now they wanna hear a country nigga rap. Five albums in, I swear a country nigga snap. Thought they wanted gold. Thought they wanted shine. Thought they wanted radio. Bitch, make up your mind. Fuck them niggas. Hope the hook wasn't too simple. Either way, nigga, I wrote it. Yes, I made the beat. Yes, I made the track. I ain't far from rap. You a one-trick pony. I don't fall in line. I define what's right.
rhyme. Fuck what you were thinking. Bloggers, they could quote it. Ladder rappers buried underneath my house. They know what I'm about. You ain't even know it. Overdose on hocus pocus, jibber jabber, snapper. My stature was fucking breathing. Dragon, king of every castle. How they signing rappers? All these labels must be giving out a rap for regular like cattle. Keeping niggas shackled, leaving people back for tap dance. Nigga, misleading all of your rap fans. Nigga, mind what you do a lap dance. Nigga, sap ass. Nigga, do whatever for some dap ass. Nigga, I ain't got time to watch out for chillin'. Stay out of my kitchen. The shit that I'm cooking ain't meant for your kind. Crackling, bashing the shit out your spine. King with a crime, humble and tall. Tyrants never keep quiet. They rather be violent, so I'm beheading them all. The lay of the land, I'm setting fire to build the bridges. You ain't still at a show until you sell out one of me as a city. What's good for hip hop may not be good for my soul. So I keep flexing, wrecking for the people that respect and check and fuck on control.
Are you not entertained?
Now they wanna hear country nigga rap.
Joining me now on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, a very special guest. We've had him on before. If any of you follow the podcast, which I know you all are, on iTunes, of course. Again, search hip hop and sports and find us on the podcast section there. But anyways, without any further ado, author Kenneth Hicks Jr. joining us on the show. Kenneth, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, man. I'm happy to be here. It's like my second home, man. You know, I come in, you know, go in the refrigerator, don't even ask, you know, grab a beer, you know, sit down, put my feet on the table. You know, I'm at home right now, so I'm good.
Yeah, definitely. Just walk straight on into the refrigerator. I like that. I might have to reuse that one. Just come on in, you know what I'm saying? Just go on straight into the refrigerator, man. This is his home.
Let's get to it.
Exactly, right here on the Your Ad Here hotline for the preseason podcast of the year. Anyways, before we get into any hip-hop talk, I wanted to ask you real quick, Kenny. I already went into it probably more than I should have about the Donald Sterling incident. And everybody and their mama has been talking about it all day. But I wanted to get the feel of what's happening in Los Angeles. You are located in Los Angeles or in the Los Angeles area, and you're not a Clippers fan or a Lakers fan, but you're in the area and you are a basketball fan. So I wanted to get your take. What is the vibe that you're getting in Los Angeles as far as the reaction to the Donald Sterling incident?
Well, I'd probably have to say the overall sentiment that I'm kind of seeing from the city more than anything else, it just hurt. You know, I think that what people don't understand is I think that a lot of people who are outside of Los Angeles, when they look at L.A., they think that, you know, everybody's a transplant, and because of that, you know, Lakers fans aren't real fans and that sort of thing. You know, it's a lot of big market teams get that kind of flack a lot of times. But, you know, I think that once you're actually here and you actually see the people of the city, they pride themselves on their basketball team. They pride themselves on their team doing well. You know, pride themselves on the Lakers and the things that the Lakers have accomplished. And a lot of those fans have transferred over, not necessarily even in a bandwagon kind of way, but just more so just in a sense of pride in your city. And, you know, if you see somebody in your city doing well, you got to acknowledge it. So a lot of people are actually Clippers fans here, and they're supporting the team, and they just seem just genuinely hurt, because I think that what a lot of people may not – another thing that people may not understand necessarily about the Los Angeles area is just that people here – it's a very accepting place, and people come from all walks of life. You know, there's, you know, all these neighborhoods – all throughout Los Angeles and the greater Los Angeles area, you know, just supporting and representing people. So when you have an owner of a team making such a divisive and harsh comment about any group of people in a town that's so accepting of people of various races, I think that it's just hurt. And I think that, you know, it's not indicative of the people of L.A. It's not indicative of, you know, even the rest team for that matter, but you know, these alleged comments by Donald Sterling and just really seem to, you know, kind of hurt the people on the whole. And it's hard to rally behind a team when you know that this is still the mindset of the owner. So I think that the people are just kind of in limbo at this point. They really don't know which way to turn.
Interesting stuff there. And just to so you know, you were cutting in and out just a little bit. But we'll work with it though. No worries there. So without delaying any further, I wanted to get your thoughts on a few things regarding the state of female hip hop right now. I noticed, obviously, Iggy Azalea. She released her new album last week. I believe it's called The New Classic. Was the name of that album? She released that last week. Nicki Minaj, she's made a few headlines because I don't even think she has any music out really per se outside of, like, I think they had the Young Money compilation album came out a month or two ago. But aside from that, I don't really think she has a lot of new music out right now. But she is kind of rebranding herself as we speak now with the, she's going back to her straight, you know, black hair. She's not wearing the funky wigs anymore. Like the, she like put the ass implants away, I think, or, you know, I guess she's gotten like the medium ass implants instead of like the extra large ass implants, something like that. But she's basically toned down the cartoonishness of her persona and her character. And a lot of people feel like, okay, now she's getting back to the real Nicki. She's getting back to the rugged, raw MC that, you know, that kind of got her discovered by Lil Wayne and Young Money and Baby and them. And between Iggy and Nicki, that they're basically the only two females doing it right now with any kind of relevance. Any other female MC in the game at this point, they exist, but they're not they don't have any impact or imprint on the music game or on the culture right now. And so it got me thinking, where is the state of female hip hop? What is the state of the union as it relates to female hip hop? Because it seemed like it was a lot better, you know, back in the 90s when you had Foxy and Kim and Missy and Eve, and you had all these people in the 90s and early 2000s. And they were still making music. They were still getting on the radio. They still have their records played. I don't know if it's a content issue, if it's just a talent issue. And I left out Lauryn Hill, by the way. But I don't know what it was. And so what do you think? Do you think female hip hop is lacking right now? And if so, why do you think that is?
I think that female hip hop is lacking right now. I think that there is definitely a kind of a vacuum. You know, there's like a void now in the game. You know, I think that realistically, you know, it's kind of hard to say exactly what the catalyst of it all was. I do know that, well, I'll put it like this. In my personal opinion, when we look at the era of, say, Foxy and Lil' Kim, you know, I think that they get a little bit too much credit. You know, I think that people, the general public, you know, they look it back at them and think, like, wow, they were really doing it, and they were really on the ball. But the truth of the matter is that they weren't writing their own rhymes. And they were really, if anything else, they were just kind of vehicles for male artists, namely Biggie and Jay-Z, to, you know, get more content out there. And, you know, you notice that once, Notorious Big left us and Jay stepped away from Foxy, you know, the production came to a halt. You know, and when you look at the careers of those two artists in particular, they, you know, when we look at their careers, we're essentially talking about no more than two albums apiece. And, you know, they've been in the game for almost 20 years now, maybe, you know, close to it. So, you know, I think that with them in particular, I think that they kind of get a little bit too much credit as far as, their imprint on the game and all that kind of good stuff. But it doesn't seem like to me that they really have done a whole lot, you know, with their time in the spotlight.
Can I jump in real quick?
Go right ahead.
Okay. My response to that would be that Kim did release an album that got 5 mics in the Source, and that was in the mid-2000s. I don't know if it was, I think it was The Naked Truth. Was that the one? Let me see real quick. I'm on the internet looking this up, and maybe this is part of the problem that, you know. Yeah, I think she got 5 mics from the Source on that one. That was the one with Lighters Up on it. You know, I mean, so, I mean, again, not to say that she's been killing the rap game in recent years, and not to say that Foxy or anybody else has either, but I'm just pointing out the fact that there was some success post Biggie. Although, to your point, I listened to a little bit of Iggy Azalea's new album. I haven't heard all of it, but I've heard a few tracks off of there, and there was one song where she was spitting, and I'm listening to it, and I'm like, man, that sounds a lot like T.I. Dun dun dun, and I'm just like okay. So that could be happening, and that hasn't been confirmed yet, I don't believe, but you know, it definitely sounded a little tippish. You know what I'm saying? It sounded tippish, and so again, so that I guess that raises the question: is it a talent thing? I don't think anybody really thinks though that Nicki is not writing her own raps. I mean, I think there may have been a rap here or there that maybe that she didn't do, but by and large, I would say that the majority of her work appears to be her own, from her own brain. Is that fair to say or no?
I would tend to believe so. I don't know this as a fact. I don't have any insider information, but to the best of my knowledge, it seems to me that Nicki has been pretty much authentically Nicki from the start, you know, for better or for worse. You know, she has been doing her own thing, which I give her credit for, just because of the fact that, you know, I think that she's able to bring some kind of versatility to what she does. I mean, if you compare her to, say, I don't know, let's say Trina, who just raps, you know, pretty much strictly about, you know, her red bottoms and doing five or six best friends, you know, to me, I welcome Nicki's versatility as opposed to that. If those are the options that we're given, you know, I'll take Nicki and her versatility in the game over just, you know, the cliche female rap bad bitch lyrics any day of the week. But, you know, but at the end of the day, those shouldn't be the only two options. You know, I think that, you know, the game does have an opportunity to have more than that in it. But, you know, there was, you know, there is a lack of just noteworthy, you know, females in the game right now. There's not even, like, a whole lot of people you can look at and say, okay, well, she's next up. You know, there's nobody really on the landscape right now. I mean, if you were talking about who would be the next reasonably successful female rapper to you know, hit the mainstream, I don't know. I mean, Remy Martin comes home in July. you know, I don't know. What are I'm kind of drawing at straws here.
Well, you know she's gonna jump on that. She's gonna have a little Remy Martin Papoose collaboration that'll set the streets on fire, you know. But you know, I do believe, and this is a little. I don't know what you want to call it, a little saying that I've kind of used in my own head, but I've never really talked about it publicly. But when it relates to hip hop, I really do believe that the streets always lead. You know, the streets always dictate what's hot and what's not. There was, and by streets, I if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you don't know who I mean when I say in the streets, then you're probably not in the streets from a musical standpoint. But I just mean, you know, anybody that you know that's in your barbershops, at your local soul food spot, at the car wash, you know what I'm saying? Wherever you meet people, your neighbors, your friends, your family, your cousins, your people at school, whoever that you know that you respect as far as having some kind of understanding of what makes good hip hop music, anybody like that, then those are the individuals that kind of dictate what it is that we're listening to down the road. Now, when something bubbles in the streets, like I heard the bubble about Nicki Minaj before she really took off, and then next thing you know, she does the five star bitch track or whatever that was called, remix with Trina and Irv Gotti or whoever was on that record, and then like after that it was like boom and she blew up, and then all of a sudden you have Nicki Minaj. Now you have her, she's dressing up like Gaga, who was dressing up like Madonna, you know what I'm saying, and she's doing all this wacky stuff on stage, and it's just like, okay, that's her gimmick. But initially it was about the lyrics, it was about the delivery, it was about the attitude, and that's what got her discovered, and the streets dictated that she ought to be known, and eventually it came to pass. And then once she got too corny for the streets, And they said, oh, she's just a pop artist now. She got all this mainstream success and made all this money and was doing worldwide tours and all this other stuff. But then the streets stopped messing with her. Now what do you see? You see her scaling it back. She's losing all the wigs and the colorful outfits. She's going more humble with it. And now it seems like people those same people that kind of put her on in the first place are more receptive to what she's bringing to the table now. So I guess with all that being said, is it just a matter of content and lyrical dexterity? Where if you're a female and you're really spitting, are you gonna get that recognition, or is it just the fact that this is still a male dominated industry, and if males are the primary consumers, or if males are the primary individuals that are leading the quote unquote streets, is it just too difficult for a woman to break through and make some music that somebody wants, that a man wants to listen to?
You know, I think it all goes hand in hand. I think that for the female rap artist, I think that it's a delicate balance, you know, because truth be told, you know, as they say about male rappers, at least, they say that, you know, the ideal male rapper is somebody who the guys want to be and the women want to sleep with. And, you know, I think that from a female rapper standpoint, it's almost the same thing. It's like, you know, the women have to want to be you, and, you know, the men have to want to sleep with you. And if you are a female rapper, you're a female MC, and if you don't have a polished look about yourself, women won't respect you just because of that alone. They'll say, hey, you know, why does her weave look raggedy? Why does her hair not look on point? Why is her clothes not, why is she wearing the same outfit she wore last week on the award show? You know, women are just as critical of women as men are. And I think that, you know, for a female MC, you know, you could have the greatest content and be the most impactful lyricist you could be, but if you don't have the presentation to go with it, it'll be a hard sell. Even if you look at it from like a historical standpoint, you look at Biggie, you know, Biggie was a smooth cat. You know, Biggie, he let it be known. He is not the prettiest dude you're ever going to want to see, but, you know, nobody ever really called him out on it. Meanwhile, people roasted Craig Mack in the same era, you know? But I think that when you look at a female artist, I think that, you know, you really have to be on point on everything at all times for people to take you seriously. And, you know, until we actually have female artists that have that complete package, you know, I don't know when you're going to see another female artist that will come along and really have a significant impact.
But we see male artists that don't have the complete package, and they still get on. You know, maybe they don't even have turned huge careers out of it, but they still get recognition. They still get some kind of shine, whether it's somebody that's just based off lyricism, like a Joey Badass or somebody like that, or if it's somebody that like the kid that made the OG Bobby Johnson, that song, you know what I'm saying? Like, that kid still he's shining right now, you know? And that, a female MC can't even get that, though. Like, I mean, what does it take? So how fair is it to the female artist right now? How fair is the rap game to the female artist?
It's not fair. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to straight business, and it's what they call in the business world the dollar vote. You know, we as consumers are making votes every day, whether you realize it or not. When you step into a store or you decide to go to McDonald's instead of Burger King, you are making a vote with your dollar. You're saying, I'm putting my dollar in this person's pocket and not this other person's pocket. So likewise, when you go to your websites and you click on your links for one artist and not another one, you know, to download their music, or if you go to the store and you decide to buy one album and not another, or if you decide to go to one person's concert and not another person's concert, you are making a choice, and you are voting one person over the other options that were available in that same time frame. So all that being said, you know, for a female artist, it's, you know, in order for us to maybe have some more credible female artists, you know, I would love to hear like a female J Electronica or a female, And I don't even mean that in the sense of, like, somebody just copying what they do, but I'm just saying, like, you know, somebody who is a female artist that speaks with that kind of depth and that kind of lyricism. I would love to see that. But, you know, in order for us to even get to that point, we have somebody has to dig them up, wherever they may be, and, you know, we as the hip-hop community and the fans need to support these people because, you know, it is a business. And, you know, the people who are not going to turn a profit, no matter how talented, will be swept under the rug quickly. It's just kind of the way the game goes. So to answer your question, it's not fair. And I don't know any other way to really level that playing field except for just supporting quality female artists when they do come about.
I think back in the, excuse me, I think back in the 90s, there was somewhat of a recognized and accepted void for the female voice, because even before we came off the Queen Latifah, MC Light era, and then they kind of went, you know, did their own thing, and then it was like, okay, there's this void here. How are we going to fill this void? We need a new female to pass the torch to, or not? I shouldn't say a female. We need new females to pass the torch to carry on this torch. Now, as I stated before, there's definitely more than two female rappers out there. You know, like you said, Trina before. Trina's still getting money. You know, you got Diamond and some other artists that are still out here. So it's not that they don't exist, but there's really only two headliners, for lack of a better term, that are female right now in the game. And that's even being generous to Iggy Azalea for me to even include her in that class. So, If you're a female MC, do you think it's harder to come up now than it was 15, 20 years ago? Or do you think it's easier now because there's just more mediums and you can do it on your own, you don't need a label support? Or it could be harder because, like I said, there doesn't seem to be a rush to fill that void? Or do you think it's the same?
I think that it's going to be hard for female artists in hip-hop, whatever era it is. You know, whether this was in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, or today, I think it's still going to be very hard for a female MC to really, make it to that level of prominence in the game. However, I have to say that overall, I think that things are a lot easier now on the whole. And the reason I say that is, you know, to your point about technology. You know, I think that now we're at a point where artists can make beats, they can, you know, in their own homes, they can connect with other artists around the world from their own homes. You can find a beat made in Turkey, you know, from your home in North Carolina, and it's nothing. It's just about pointing and clicking at this point in time. So that being said, if you can connect with the right people and do the right things, if you have the talent and the creativity, your music can reach people. So it's not about the lack of outlets. The issue just becomes a matter of what a label really be willing to put forth the effort and put the time and energy behind. You know, another thing that I think goes into this too is that if you own a label and you have the option between signing a female artist and a male artist, I think typically it's easier to sign the male artist just because of the fact that, you know, it's going to be less maintenance. You know, a male artist, let's say if you were starting a label and you had the opportunity to sign either, let's say, Meek Mill or Nicki Minaj, you know, between those two, people are going to have their preferences. Some people may say, I don't like either one of them. That's fine. But the point is that, you know, Meek is going to need maybe a stylist and maybe a barber, and he's good to go. You know, Nicki needs stylists. She needs hair people, makeup people. You know, she has a whole entourage of people that are going to be just necessary for the label to pay for in order to make her into who they need to make her be, you know. They need to get the ass shots or surgery or whatever she has going on. You know, it's always something extra to keep these women on top of their game. Meanwhile, when you have, like I said, an artist like a Meek Mill or somebody, it's relatively low maintenance, I would think. You know, give them a budget for some clothes and give them a stylist and a barber, and he should be good to go.
I think that's a very good point. My counter to that would be you're gonna have to pay for Meek Mill's jewelry for one, and on top of that, the kind of like you look at a draft stock and we're gonna talk about NFL draft on next week's show, but kind of like when you look at draft stock, you know, the ceiling for Nicki Minaj is way higher, so that investment may cost more up front, but the payoff is way higher, because who do you think sells more records? Who do you think sells out more shows? Who do you think is more profitable as an artist right now? I don't think it's close between the two of them. So even though, so everything that you're saying is true, but I think that there's two sides to that. And then there's the whole other issue of whether or not a female is even comfortable with whoring herself out, in some cases literally, to get on, no pun intended. Unfortunately we're out of time, man. We have to leave it there. But thank you so much. And we can talk about that. We can dive more into this issue, in the future, because we barely even scratched the surface, but the time goes by so quick here on the podcast. So anything you want to plug before you get out of here, Kenny?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I think that, keep supporting hip hop, everybody. You know, again, if you find a good artist, tell a friend, man. You know, it's so many talented artists out here that don't get the shine that they deserve. They're just trying to get their break. If you know a talented artist, you know, hit up Hip Hop Sports Report. You know, what better place to try to get them the launching pads that they deserve than right here? You know, it's about, you know, each one teach one. Get everybody's name out here who deserves it. You know, let us know if there's somebody hot in your city. Put it out there. You know, hit us up on Twitter. And like I said, we can keep it moving from there. Keep the culture moving forward.
Absolutely. Word up. And again, you can follow Kenny on Twitter at Author K Hicks. Is that right?
That's sure right.
Right, author at Author K Hicks on Twitter. And he's got a book coming called A Natural Life. Is that correct?
Natural Life. It should be coming in July or August. Hopefully July, possibly August. I'll get the date to you as soon as I get it.
We won't hold you to that, but Natural Life is coming soon to your eyeballs. And thank you for putting this Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, this latest edition of the preseason podcast of the year, in your earballs. And we about to get up out of here, y'all. So thank you for joining us once again. The show is on iTunes. Hit us up there. Hit us up. The website is hiphopsportsreport.com. We're on Twitter also at HHS Report. Enjoy the rest of the NBA playoffs, y'all. And we out of here. Later.